Mr. Sponge's Sporting Tour by R. S. Surtees. Chapter 11. The Deal and the Disaster. If people are inclined to deal, bargains can very soon be struck at idle watering places where anything in the shape of occupation is a godsend, and bargainers know where to find each other in a minute. Everybody knows where everybody is. Have you seen Jack Sprat? Oh, yes, he's just gone into Muddle's Bazaar with Miss Flouncy, looking uncommon sweet. Or, can you tell me where I shall find Mr. Sloman? Answer, you'll find him at his lodgings, number 15, Belvedere Terrace, till 7:15. He's gone home to dress, to dine with Major and Mrs. Holdsworthy at Grunton Villa, for I heard him order Jenkins Fly at that time. Cangy Thornton knew exactly when he would find Mr. Waffles at Miss Lollipop's, the confectioner, eating ices and making love to that very interesting, much-courted young lady. True to his time, there was Waffles, eating and eyeing the cherry-colored ribbons floating in graceful curls along her raven-colored ringlets down Miss Lollipop's nice, fresh, plump cheeks. After expatiating on the great merits of the horse and the certainty of getting all the money back by steeplechasing him in the spring, and stating his conviction that Mr. Sponge would not take any part of the purchase money in pictures or jewelry or anything of that sort, Mr. Waffles gave his consent to deal on the terms the following conversation shows.
My friend will give you your price, if you wouldn't mind taking his check and keeping it for a few months till he's into funds, observed Mr. Thornton,
who now sought Mr. Sponge out at the billiard-room.
"Why," observes Mr. Sponge thoughtfully, "you know horses are always ready money."
"True," replied Thornton, "at least that's the theory of the thing, only my friend is rather peculiarly situated at present."
"I suppose Mr. Waffles is your man," observed Mr. Sponge, rightly judging that there couldn't be two such flats in the place.
"Just so," said Mr. Thornton.
"I'd rather take his stiff than his check," observed Mr. Sponge after a pause. "I could get a bit of stiff done, but a check, you see, especially a postdated one, is always objected to."
"Well, I dare say that will make no difference," observed Mr. Thornton. "Stiff, if you prefer it. Say 3 months, or perhaps you'll give us 4?
"3's long enough, in all conscience," replied Mr. Sponge, with a shake of his head, adding, "Bullfrog made me pay down on the nail."
"Well, so be it, then," assented Mr. Thornton. "You draw at 3 months, and Mr. Waffles will accept, payable at Coutts."
After so much liberality, Mr. Cangy expected that Mr. Sponge would have hinted at something handsome for him, but all Sponge said was,
"So be it,"
too, as he walked away to buy a bill stamp. Mr. Waffles was more considerate, and promised him the first mount on his new purchase, though Cangy would rather have had a 10 or even a 5-pound note. Toward the hours of 10 on that eventful day, numerous gaitered, trousered, and jacketed grooms began to ride up and down the high street, most of them with their stirrups crossed negligently on the pommels of the saddles, to indicate that their masters were going to ride the horses and not them. The street grew lively, not so much with people going to hunt, as with people coming to see those who were. Tattered Hibernians with rags on their backs and jokes on their lips, young English chevaliers d'industry with their hands ready to dive into anybody's pockets but their own, stablemen out of place, servants loitering on their errands, striplings helping them, ladies' maids with novels or three-cornered notes, and a good crop of beggars.
"What, Spareneck, do you ride the grey today? I thought you'd done Gooseman out of a mount,"
observed Ensign Downley, as a line of scarlet-coated youths hung over the balcony of the Imperial Hotel after breakfast and before mounting for the day. Spareneck,
"No, that's for Tuesday. He wouldn't stand one today. What do you ride?" "Oh, I have a hack. One of Screwman's. Perpetual motion, they call him, because he never gets any rest. That's him, I believe, with his lofty-actioned hind legs," added he, pointing to a weedy string-halty bay passing below, high in bone and low in flesh.
"'Who's the gaudy chestnut?'
asked Kangy Thornton, who now appeared, wiping his fat lips after his second glass of eau de vie.
"'That's Mr. Sponge's,'
replied Spareneck in a low tone, knowing how soon a man catches his own name.
"'A deuced fine horse he is, too,' observed Kangy in a louder key, adding, "'Sponge has the finest lot of horses of any man in England. In the world, I may say.'
Mr. Sponge himself now rose from the breakfast-table, and was speedily followed by Mr. Waffles and the rest of the party, some bearing sofa-pillows and cushions to place on the balustrades to loll at their ease, in imitation of the Coventry Club swells in Piccadilly. Then our friends smoked their cigars, reviewed the cavalry, and criticized the ladies who passed below in the flies on their way to the meet.
"'Come, old Bolter!' exclaimed one. "'Here's Miss Bussington coming to look after you. "'Got her mamma with her, too. "'So you may as well knock under at once, "'for she's determined to have you.'
"'A devil of the woman, the old un is, too,' observed Anson Downley. "'She nearly frightened Jack Simpers of ours into fits "'by asking what he meant after dancing three dances with her daughter one night.
"'My word, but Miss Jumpheavy must expect to do some execution today "'with that fine floating feather.' "'in her crimson satin dress and ermine,' observed Mr. Waffle, "'as that estimable lady drove past in her Victoria Phaeton. "'She looks like the Queen of Sheba herself. "'But come, I suppose,' he added, "'taking a most diminutive Geneva watch out of his waistcoat pocket. "'We should be going. "'See, there's your nag kicking up a shindy,' he said to Kangy Thornton. As the redoubtable Brown was led down the street by a jean-jacketed groom, kicking and lashing out at everything he came near.
"'I'll kick him,' observed Thornton, retiring from the balcony to the brandy bottle and helping himself to a pretty good-sized glass.
He then extricated his large cutting whip from the confusion of whips with which it was mixed, and clonk, clonk, clonk downstairs to the door. "'Multum in parvo!' stopped the doorway, across whose shoulder Leather passed the following hints, in a low tone of voice, to Mr. Sponge, as the latter stood drawing on his dogskin gloves, the observed, as he flattered himself, of all observers.
"'Mind now,' said Leather, "'this oss has a will of his own, though he seems so quiet-like, he's not always to be depended on, so be on the lookout for squalls.'
"'Sponge!' Having had a glass of brandy, just mounted with the air of a man thoroughly at home with his horse, and drawing the rein, with a slight feel of the spur, passed on from the door to make way for the redoubtable Hercules. Hercules was evidently not in a good humor. His ears were laid back, and the rolling white eye showed mischief. Sponge saw all this, and turned to see whether Thornton's clumsy washball seat would be able to control the fractious spirit of the horse.
"'Whoa!'
roared Thornton, as his first dive at the stirrup missed, and was answered by a hearty kick out from the horse, the "whoa!" being given in a very different tone to the gentle, coaxing style of Mr. Buckram and his men. Had it not been for the brandy within and the lookers-on without, there is no saying but Kangy would have declined the horse's further acquaintance. As it was, he quickly repeated his attempt at the stirrup with the same sort of domineering "whoa!" adding, as he landed in the saddle and snatched at the reins,
"Do you think I stole you?"
Whatever the horse's opinion might be on that point, he didn't seem to care to express it, for finding kicking alone wouldn't do, he immediately commenced rearing too, and by a desperate plunge, broke away from the groom before Thornton had either got him by the head or his feet in the stirrups. Three most desperate bounds he gave, rising at the bit as though he would come back over if the hold was not relaxed, and the fourth effort bringing him to the opposite curbstone, he up again with such a bound and impetus that he crashed right through Messrs. Frippery and Flummery's fine plate-glass window, to the terror and astonishment of their elegant young counter-skippers, who were busy arranging their ribbons and finery for the day. Right through the window Hercules went, switching through book muslins and barèges as he would through a bullfinch, and attempting to make his exit by a large plate-glass mirror against the wall of the cloakroom beyond, which he dashed all to pieces with his head.
Worse remains to be told. Multum and Parvo, seeing his old comrade's hindquarters disappearing through the window, just took the bit between his teeth and followed, in spite of Mr. Sponge's every effort to turn him, and when at length he got him hauled round, the horse was found to have decorated himself with a sky-blue visite trimmed with Honiton lace, which he wore like a charger on the way to the Crusades, or a steed bearing a knight to the Eglinton tournament. Quick as it happened, and soon as ever, all Laverick Wells seemed to have congregated in the street as our heroes rode out of the folding glass doors. End of chapter 11.